time, Councilor Ron, so we do have a forum and we can continue.
You mean, no, to the specific way?
Thanks for this meeting. All right, so now that we have a fine forum, we can continue with the meeting. Welcome, everyone. Time is now 2 minutes after 1 p.m. And we have forum, so we're gonna get moving. Okay, first and foremost, we're gonna go into the public comment section. If you've noticed on our meeting notice and agenda that we reserved 20 minutes in total, giving each speaker a total of 2 minutes per. Couple of caveats to that. We ask that no personal attacks and be respectful and exercise some decorum. And it looks like we've got quite a bit to go through on the agenda, so we're gonna be very stringent on the 2 minute rule. That being said, do we have any public comments? One second.
All right, I wasn't able to access the recording of the March meeting. It's not on the Facebook page, thus I cannot comment on any controversies that may have arose during that meeting. And I implore the district council to please post that meeting if they do have a recording of it. Regarding accusations that the Community Council of Public Safety and Police Initiatives is a impostering this committee, I find that those accusations are bunk. The reason I find them bunk is because I've attended several of those meetings that happened prior to these meetings, and there didn't seem to be any objection from any of the councilors at that time. I even asked both Orlikoff and Mr. Burke to the legal basis of the committee, and they both were able to provide me with those with that information, and there was no objection at that time to that committee. Even at the when the committee has met, Councilor Ron has removed himself from those meetings to comply with law. So thus I find any claims of impersonating this to be bunk and frankly feigned. And the only reason why there's any sort of disagreement now is because of how of things that may have been said during those meetings. I think a lot of what the community council's success in getting media and contacts with the alders and the police, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Mr. Burke has tenacity, he's organized, he's professional. I get regular communication from him via email. He's transparent. So I think that is probably why he might be getting success with the media and other things. And so
thank you very much for your comments. Do we have any other comments? Yes, Ms. Hayman.
Yeah, I've gone to several of those meetings also, and I've been very concerned about them because it appears that the police commander in the 14th District is meeting with Adam, but is refusing to meet with our district council, and that has me extremely concerned. We were told at the last meeting our last district council meeting that she could not attend meetings on Saturday, and we asked you to see if there was a possibility of getting a meeting on a weeknight. I don't know the status of that, but I feel like that this committee has not represented the desires and none of the issues that they're taking out to the aldermen, or I'm assuming to the district council, have been approved or discussed by this body, and I find that very concerning. I know at one point, one of the meetings I went to, just as the meeting was closing, Adam decided that he was going to go to the 14th district and propose that what we needed was more helicopters, which is not my top priority. But I never had a chance to discuss that in that meeting because the meeting closed so quickly right after that. So yeah, I think the concerns are well founded that this committee is posing as if it were the 14th District Council, which it is not. And as far as I'm concerned, also at the last meeting, we asked that this committee be disbanded, that all committees be disbanded, because none of them have been voted on or approved by our elected councilors. So that's, I do have a lot of concerns about this, and I hope we're going to discuss this further today.
Sorry for popping in late. I'd like to second what Sally just said. I got an email yesterday. Actually, got two emails. I got the email for this one and the email for what Sally's talking about. And you have to suss through, and it's very, very confusing. I mean, we know that it's not the same thing, but it's getting to a point now where it's really becoming a distraction. So I think I agree with what Sally just said.
Thank you for your time. Mr. Rodriguez, you have the floor.
Hi. I've said this before, but I'll repeat it again. Neil Rizdo, Industrial Workers of the World. The helicopter issue is, I mean, helicopters are ineffectual. It's a waste of money. Because I've been to a lot of protest actions where the police would be using helicopters for crowd control. And if it's after dark, it doesn't work. No, we can invade the area in the day. A lot of protest actions. So it's a really silly issue. I don't know why people keep bringing it up.
Because it's cool.
Thank you, Mr. Eisen. Any other further public comment? Yes, Mr.
Milan. I would just like to voice my support for disbanding the subcommittees. And I want to echo what Sally said in regards to the commander meets with that subcommittee but doesn't meet with our district councils. In last month's meeting, a number of people from the community said that they were confused about how that subcommittee related to the main district councils because the subcommittee was putting a sign-in sheet next to the district council sheets. People were going to that subcommittee's meeting thinking it was the district councils. Not to mention, the chair of that subcommittee has gone around and emailed district councilors, like the one in the 12th district, leaving the impression that he is an elected official. And so I think we should disband the subcommittee. That isn't to say that you can't meet to talk about what you want to meet. If you want to meet to talk about what you want to meet about, go for it, but not under the guise of being a 14th district entity. So
what subcommittee are you talking about?
The whichever subcommittee everyone else has been talking about.
It meets just before this one.
The committee. Point of order. The committee is opposed to the
public comment. So I'm throwing my name in the ring with all the other people who have said we should disband the subcommittees. That isn't to say if you wanna bring your issues on policing into the 14th district, bring it into this main space, and we can discuss there.
It's a question.
Those are my thoughts.
Thank you. Any other public comment?
I didn't know they were a subcommittee. I thought they were a separate entity. That's all I have to say.
Now you can't disband something you have no control over.
Is it a subcommittee or not? Can you try your best at?
Is it a community group or a subcommittee?
Point of order. This is public comment. We should probably refrain from asking questions.
Okay, do we have any other public comment?
Yes. Is it a subcommittee or a separate entity?
We're not in a position to answer questions on behalf of other exterior entities. does not recognize as a subcommittee.
Thank you.
Any other public comment?
Good morning, everybody. As many of you know, there are some contentious issues on the agenda today, and serious allegations have been made in emails and on an anonymous blog. Given that I have only 2 minutes to speak, I won't be able to address them all, but I'll try to hit some high points. The reason we're all here today and why the CCPSA was created is so our community has a voice in overseeing the police and trying to get them to do a better job, to be fairer, safer, more effective at addressing crime, and above all, to be accountable to us. Because the district counselors who represent us are not legally allowed to work together in between monthly meetings, and because these monthly meetings are brief, the city code provides for the council to, quote, enlist qualified volunteers to assist them, including on committees. The statute is mute on how they are chosen, organized, basically everything else. We're all here, we're just ordinary people trying to help. The proposed resolution and statements to the media contain several untrue and misleading assertions, among them that meetings were conducted under false pretenses or by impersonating an elected official. That's false. It singles out one of our four alder people, implying there's some political agenda. That's false. It claims people won't meet with a particular counselor because they think I'm the real counselor. That's false. And last, it states our committee was not transparent and that I have a personal agenda. That's false. Our volunteer committee is clear. It was enlisted, not directed, by a district counselor to assist, but it is itself not a public body. It has public open meetings anyone can attend, reports to the council what we do, and makes suggestions, not decisions. This resolution is based on falsehoods and is intended to retaliate against, intimidate, and discourage community members. And I have a few more lines, which I will skip, but I'll share with anybody who wants, and I'll provide a copy of this.
Do we have any further public comment?
Yeah. Allison Schmidt, I categorically object to basically all of your points. I think that is accurate or true. I think everyone who was here at the last meeting a month ago would well remember the misperception. Obviously, there's a difference between perception and reality. I'm not questioning your intent, but I think it's not helping the situation. It's actually detrimental. So I am for disbanding this subcommittee and all subcommittees. But I think there's just one that we're talking about.
So you don't want to hear people's opinions. You want to hear
again,
your opinion coming out of their mouth.
Order.
Either you make a public comment or you don't.
Yeah, it was.
I'll be recognized for it.
I think the purpose of having other committees is to bring other ideas to the table. I don't think that what this board and these three people stand for is what we all stand for. And I think that everyone needs to grow up a little bit and discuss, like adults, different ideas.
Thank you, Tom. Do we have any other further public comment? That's all for public comment. All right, we'll go ahead and move on in our agenda. Okay, we've got two sets of minutes that we are looking to approve. For those unaware, we had our quarterly meeting with all district councilors invited to attend. This was at the Corliss High School at 821 East 103rd Street. All councilors have been provided with a preview of these minutes. Are there any objections to the minutes that have been submitted? Okay, that being said, by unanimous consent, we will go ahead and approve those minutes. Okay, I don't have a copy of them, but much of them, but they were shared with my colleagues here via email. There may be help on those.
I'm not.
vote, as per our order, we are allowed to delay the vote on minutes for the next subsequent meeting, which means we absolutely have to take a closer look at them in the time being and vote on them. We'll delay the vote on the March meeting minutes until our April, I'm sorry, our May. So let me recapitulate that to resolve any confusion. The meeting minutes for March will be up for vote and approval on our May meeting. A lot of hands on. Okay, council member updates. Do we have any updates from either of my colleagues?
Sure. I will touch on some of these things in later sections, so I'll make this brief, just listing some upcoming dates between now and our next meeting, May 4th. On Monday, this Monday, April 8th, the Freedom Move Coalition is doing a banner drop to drop your textual stops, holding a sign at the 35th Street pedestrian bridge crossing Lakeshore Drive. They just released their 2023 updated report on traffic stops with the data from last year. Also, the petitions to sign to get a hearing on traffic stops are in the 35th, 26th, and 1st Ward offices. On April 13th, sorry I don't have copies of these flyers, but there is going to be a community cleanup that's a cross-district effort between the 14th, 17th, and 25th police districts, organized primarily by Councilor Beth Rochford in the 17th District Council, also including the 30th Ward Neighbors United and 35th Ward Neighbors United, as well as the Violence Prevention Group, also Alliance of Local Service Organizations. So that's April 13th at 11 a.m., also organized by Trash People of Logan Square, who do a lot of community cleanups. Yes?
If I may, because I am familiar with that initiative. It's Avondale Park, correct?
Yes, correct. Yes, meeting at Avondale Park, 3516 West School Street at 11 a.m. on Saturday, April 13th. And if you search for that, or there's an Eventbrite link if you would like to register. April 18th, there will be a report released online from the Illinois Network for Pretrial Justice titled A Vision for Supporting Communities After the End of Money Bond. And then April 20th, another district counselor, Elise Edwards from the 11th District, has her event, a conference titled We Are Our Own Medicine, which is a gun violence prevention conference. With a lot of different speakers. I'm not gonna run through the agenda for that, but that if you're interested in gun violence prevention, that is an important event to look for. You can ask me or email Elise Edwards if you would like to register. And I think lastly for now, April 22nd, there will be a 26th Ward Housing Town Hall with safety resources. And also jobs are opening up for youth peacekeepers for the summer from the ages of 16 to 24. And you can ask me or the 26th or 35th Ward office if you know anyone who's interested in a youth summer job. Thank you.
Thank you, Council Rolcom. Council Vargas, I know that you've been very, very busy lately, and I'm dying to hear what's been going on with our nominee.
Yeah, so Councilor Vargas, I was absent last meeting because I'm a nominator, and all nominators were meeting for the month of February every week to choose 15 people. 14 people was minimum, but we chose 15 to send over to the mayor, where he chooses 7. Tomorrow is the day he has to choose the 7 of the 15 people we nominated to sit on the citywide council. The Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability, and they're tasked with changing police policies, advocating for change, and also like firing and hiring the superintendent, the COPA executive director and the CCPSA executive director. So they have a lot of power regarding public safety and accountability. So that's what I was busy doing, meeting with nominators all over the city and doing interviews, going through the applications, and it took a lot. It took many hours during the weekend. And I'm happy to answer any questions if you will have any. Okay, and then my excuse me.
I have a question. Other,
yeah.
Can you tell us of the nominees, how many are currently serving on the CCPSA?
Yeah, so currently there's two picks, Ramel Terry and Anthony Driver, who we nominated to serve again.
Thanks.
Yeah. Ramel's from the west side, Anthony south, and they're both organizers, and that's how we nominated them. We chose four youth applicants. We chose four youth applicants and four lawyers and about four organizers as well, and then one general from the north side. I really like our north side picks, and I hope that he chooses both that we put forward. Yeah.
How many applicants were there in total?
There was like 110, and we went through all those applications, and it took many hours. I had to stay up maybe two nights to get through it. And then out of those 110 applicants, we narrowed it down to 33, and we interviewed those 33 people, each of them for an hour, and that was 2 weekends, Saturday and Sunday, from 9 to 6 p.m. And then we also stayed till like midnight discussing who we were going to nominate. Maybe we chose the interviewees for the nomination picks.
I read a report last night that Brandon Johnson's office has not done background checks yet or interviewed any of the applicants. What happens if he does not agree to any of the nominees tomorrow?
Then you have to do like another month of going through that process, if I'm not mistaken. Anna from CCPSA can answer that question if she has more details.
Yeah, the ball's in Mayor Johnson's court. If he delays, which is unfortunate because it just slows everything down for the transition that we're expecting to happen in May. There's a city council meeting in the middle of April, so as long as he names people before the city council meeting, I think we're not terribly behind. So it's not great, but it's also not the end of the world if he like names it on Wednesday versus naming on Sunday, which is a deadline. It gets stickier if he waits until after the city council meeting in the middle of the month.
Thank you.
Just for the record, I saw the list of finalists. I think you guys did a great job.
Thank you. I think that we did a great job too. I'm really proud of who we nominated. Of course, there's my favorite people, but in total, all 15 except for one, I'm really proud of. And I really like that we have a very diverse group of people who will serve on the commission. And then my other updates is regarding police accountability. I know that I update you all every month on my time serving as a volunteer in the Brooklyn district during the migrant crisis in the summer. So far, I have I made many COPA complaints regarding treatment towards the migrant from the police. So far, there's four in total are sitting with BIA currently, and then one is being investigated by COPA. Because it's being delayed, I think the most serious one is when a cop showed up to a volunteer's home with very large guns asking for a migrant to pick up her things at the police station. This migrant is a young woman, and she was there with another young woman, and they had children. Children were in the space that these police showed up with very large guns. So I helped them file a COPA complaint regarding a menacing call from the 14th Police District, telling them that they were present. The officer said that they were present the day they were arrested. They have their fingerprints and they have their mugshot. And if she didn't want, as an immigrant, she shouldn't be looking for any issues. And insinuating that she should get rid of the COPA complaint. So then I made another COPA complaint regarding the intimidating phone call, and I sat down with the CCPSA lawyer, and we wrote down everything that happened that day with the migrants. They were present when we were writing that report with the lawyer, and we sent that over to OIG to be investigated by OIG instead of BIA because of conflict of interest, right? Because BIA is police investigating police, and if it was BIA who made that phone call, we strongly believe it was the 14th District, but if it was BIA who made that phone call regarding the incident, they went about it the wrong way, and it shouldn't be investigated by BIA. It should be investigated by OIG. So it's been a very long time. It's been nearly a year. So I escalated this situation to the executive director at CCPSA, and he's willing to host a meeting with OIG and myself, and also they're helping me go through the BIA kind of system and find out what's going on and why it's taking so long. That's where we're at with the migrant situations and the COPA complaints. Yes?
Is there anything we can do to help that along, or that the 14th District Council as a group can do to that investigation of the OIG and COPA?
So I should have an answer next week. Next week is when I'll be calling BIA and sitting or having a meeting with the executive director and with someone from CCPSA who's helping me through this process. And I should have an answer for you all on how to move forward. And thank you for that question. Yeah?
Can you help clarify? I kind of got lost in the details on what agencies have these investigations. You said 4 pending investigations?
There's 5.
5, okay. Okay.
And I meet so many during the summer, so I really need to sit down. And I have contact with all the migrants that make these complaints along with me, I along with them. But I'm going to organize everything this following week, and so far it's 4 with BIA and 1 with COPA.
You realize that your complaints went in the bottom of the stack of like 4,000 complaints currently under investigation by COPA, right? They don't go to the top?
Yeah.
Is that what you're up to?
I think that is all my updates for the moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Council Burris. Okay. That being said, we'll go ahead and move into the discussion portion. 5 on your agenda. Discussions around police accountability, including pretextual stops, as well as traffic intimidation and retaliation for filing complaints. Sounds a lot like what we just talked about, but I'll let whoever is responsible for that to speak up more on it.
I have a couple other points, but it maybe makes sense to continue and wrap up that discussion. Is there anything else that we should discuss related to those topics?
I give my updates.
Sure, yeah. Any further questions or comments from the people here on that? On the migrants or anything?
Oh, it's migrants. Just migrants?
Yeah, specifically on the migrant intimidation. All right, cool. So police accountability topics, I have a couple. The Free to Move Coalition released a updated 2023 traffic stop report, and it's pretty good. Well, it's not good, actually. It's pretty bad. Traffic stops continue to increase in 2023 It rose again relative to the previous year, 2022. There were almost 550,000 traffic stops in 2023 in Chicago, which is over 500% more than they were in 2015. Very briefly, this point right here in 2015 is when the federal government across the nation banned stop and frisk. And this is when the consent decree started in Chicago. And there are memos throughout the traffic stop report from every level of CPD stating the internal policy to do pretextual traffic stops, to find any excuse to stop people. And these are stops that have less than a 1% response rate of any contraband or citations or arrests. So it's a failed strategy that they're holding on to. The stops increased, you know, 600 to 500% in the years following, and that trend has not changed last year, which is disappointing, because some of the things we were told by the current commission was that they had faith that Snelling would on his own solve this, and now we have the proof that that has not happened unequivocally, which we already knew that in our district, our commander has full-throated support for pretextual traffic stops, which is at face, you know, unconstitutional. What bothers me as someone who's been hit by cars many times in the city is that in the past, 80% of our stops were for moving violations, and today, 24% of the stops are for moving violations. So over a 3x reduction in actual stops for traffic safety, which is pathetic. I would like to enter this report, and the racial disparity continues in the stops. The 14th district continues to be a hotbed for that racial disparity and stops in general. Yeah, they're ineffective for safety. I would like to make sure that the 2023 traffic stop report is entered into our records, and we can have a link to it in the minutes. Any questions on that report?
Yeah, how can you have how can only 24% of these stops be moving violations? Wouldn't that mean that the other 76% are not moving violations? And if they are, then they're not a stop.
Well, moving violation is a category of violation, so they can stop someone who is driving their car for a different reason. And to answer your question, those different reasons are licensing and registration reasons and equipment reasons. So whether it's air freshener in the windshield or a missing light on the back license plate or a cracked license plate or other things. Yeah, or if the registration is expired.
So these are all violations of the vehicle code?
Yes.
So what's wrong with it?
Why should they be stopped for something that's...
These are different questions, so we can come back to you if you raise your hand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, is there a difference between pretextual stops and say, like, oh, this person has expired tags, or this person's lights out, or this person's speeding or weaving? Like, is there a difference between like pretextual and then like actual stops for, you know, violations of the law?
Is there a difference? Your question, the framing is a little odd, but...
What is it? Can you define pretextual stop?
Yes.
And then how does that differ from actual, like, if
right.
the police are...
The police have defined it, because the police conduct stops that they have no intent... So they know that the registration is expired when they do the stop. They do the stop, it's still expired. There's no result after the stop unless they have found something else from the fishing expedition. Their stated intent at every level is to find something else, to use stops as an excuse for further investigation that they had no probable, that they had no suspicion around. And so this is all from the police. If they wanted to do it for enforcement because they believe that these code violations are the most serious threat to our city, then they should be enforcing those violations, which they're not doing 99% of the time. So the police are the ones telling us that these are not important. We also have data, other reports that I will enter that show that enforcing these things do not increase public safety. Yeah, we'll come back. Mike?
Do you have any broken down data, say by ward as well, for these stops, or even by district?
Yes, not by ward.
Plot it out maybe on a map.
Sorry.
sorry, yes, by district we do. And on the table is the, with the petitions has our district, the Free to Move website, you can see district data if you search there. Yes.
You realize, don't you, that stop and frisk was never prohibited on a federal level? Individual cities and individual police departments were cited for the way that they conduct stop and frisk, but stop and frisk is not per se unconstitutional.
No. If I were to like look at a list of traffic stops, would I be able to filter out which ones are pretextual and which ones aren't?
So that's a great question. It doesn't fit exactly necessarily as a puzzle piece. So the question of how do we reform the policy? Do we want to replace certain types of traffic enforcement with other things so that police can focus on violent 911 calls instead? Is a slightly different question from what are the police currently doing. The problem is they're devoting their resources to something that 99% of the time they have no interest in enforcing, even when they're doing it. So the police themselves have created this issue through their policy and practice. It would be a discussion in terms of what the solutions are. I would look to the research and the data in terms of what violations pose a public safety risk, and that's what the different organizations, including Free to Move, as well as the Policing Project of NYU, they also have a white paper on traffic safety. So what they try to do is use the data and see, are there any correlations between these types of stops and public safety outcomes? If not, then we can switch and have meter maids who we don't have to pay $130,000, to enforce something if it has nothing to do with public safety. We want the police to be answering 911 calls in under an hour rather than doing something that 99% of the time they think doesn't matter.
Did you say, I'm sorry, just to clarify, did you say earlier that we know that these are pretextual stops because the police have admitted that they were pretextual?
Yes, we have dozens of memos where the police say these stops are a way for us to extract consent searches. So if you don't have a reason for the search, you don't know what you're searching for, it's totally unrelated to the stop.
That's the definition of the pretextual stop.
Sally?
Yeah, as an example of the kind of stop that I think we're concerned about, at my beat meeting, 1414 in January, a neighbor and I attended and were concerned about the fact that traffic stops were happening on the corner of Fullerton and Kedzie repeatedly, several times, two or three times every night. I mean, we both have a northwest window, so we can see right out onto that intersection, and we would see the police sitting there. They would stop somebody, the lights would go on, they'd get out, they'd talk to the person, and then they'd drive on. Nothing was done, nobody was arrested. And this was going on every night for weeks until we went to the beat meeting and asked, why is this happening? Because there weren't any traffic violations, that were springing up to our attention as we looked out our windows and watched. Meanwhile, two blocks away, on Kedzie, close to Lulu's Cafe, there was a dramatic 200%, I think it was, rise in car break-ins in the corner, two blocks from Fullerton on Kedzie, repeated car break-ins where no action was taken.
With all due respect, Ms. Hammond, I don't hear a question here. Is this a question for Council Orlikoff?
Is this the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Adam.
I just wanted to say that I do find the pattern of traffic stops very concerning. I think the Chicago Police does have a history of unconstitutional interaction with the public, and I am very troubled that I think what Councilor Orlikoff described might be accurate. I'm also very concerned about the use of police time in doing things that could be handled in an automated way. For example, if, let's say, a car's registration is out of date, I think mine actually might be by 2 days. They can take a picture of that and send you a ticket.
With all due
respect.
A question. So my question is, can Councilor Orlikoff update us on the progress of the petition, which I signed at the last meeting?
Yes, some people can also, I have another point related to, for the petition, thank you, I appreciate you signing it previously and your comments. I turned in 50 signatures that we got, I don't know the total current number, so I apologize, I can ask and try to update with the, we're trying to get 2,000 signatures total.
And if you could take one more question, please.
So I just have a question because I couldn't really see what was on the piece of paper from here, but what I think I understood, and I'm just looking for you to sanity check me. In 2015, Illinois decided to stop and frisk, right? It does not violate the Fourth Amendment constitutional rights. But since then, pretextual stops have increased by 600%, and they've led to 2% of those six, of that increase, only 2% have led to an arrest. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's what I heard. Because to me, that sounds really, now this is my statement, that sounds really inefficient.
Okay.
did I get the numbers right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and any further questions in regards to the report that Councilor Orlikoff mentioned will be included in our minutes, and we will also make sure that they're shared on our social media.
Great.
Does that work for you?
That sounds perfect. Thank you. I have more, and yet where did I lost something, which was unfortunate.
Any discussion time?
Yes. Oh no, I lost my idea. Oh, it's right here. Next, maybe we can make this brief because it's the same thing. There was an excellent article by the Block Club by Pascal Sabino from February 15th. I would also like to enter this into our minutes and notes. It says, 911 calls on South and West Side ignored while rapid response cops make traffic stops instead. The breadth of the article does focus on, victims of violence who called the police and never received a response. But what sticks out to me is the police response from their official spokesperson, Scogan, from the police department, says that only one squad, in any given day, up to 600 officers are technically assigned to a rapid response detail. However, there is only one squad car per shift in each district dedicated to answering 911 calls, which is something that is difficult even for me to grasp. Chicago has a number of rapid police teams, and they're supposed to be tasked with responding rapidly to violent situations. OEMC has a system of grading 911 calls, and the number one priority calls, the top priority calls, are supposed to be immediate emergency, public danger situations where the police need to get there. Apparently, there is only one car on duty in any district that is going to respond to that priority one call. And they're also sharing duty for those other calls as well. So what are the people that are supposed to respond to priority things actually doing besides taking calls? What do you think they're doing? They're responding to traffic stops. They're actually instigating traffic stops. So there's a direct one-to-one choice that the police department has already made, and we have to change their decision, where they are choosing to harass citizens rather than take constituents' calls, even for the most serious violent alerts. And that is absurd. If the police can do anything at all for us, it is respond to emergency 911 calls. Any comments on that?
But no car chases and no foot chases.
That's not true. They have to... They can chase in the benefit of the public good. So what they've done before is kill people chasing over, shoplifting. So if there was somebody that was a public danger, they have every right to chase. And the fact that the police say that we cannot chase shows that they are not thinking about the public safety interest.
that they think if they don't have a carte blanche license to be judged dread, that they don't want to get out of bed. And that's unacceptable. There is nothing preventing them from protecting public safety. Nothing.
Wow, I'm taking offense. Take it down.
Anytime somebody lies, I'm going to correct the record.
I know.
I understand.
Stop speaking out of turn.
I understand the rules.
Stop speaking out of turn.
Order. I wrote the rule.
Stop speaking
order.
Out of
turn.
Are you telling to him or me?
I'm talking to the room.
You don't better not be looking at me when somebody else is talking during this table.
Don't raise your voice to me. That's disrespectful.
There's the door.
Why didn't you say order?
I said it three times. Order.
Every time, and you didn't say it then. You're saying it when I speak, and not when he speaks.
Relax.
If you do not name order during this session...
Hey, Mr. Orlikoff, can you please answer questions from the audience?
Maintain order when they speak.
Hey, order, Mr. Orlikoff.
You do not speak for the council. Be quiet.
I can speak for anybody I want to speak for.
Order to remove Mr. Tucker. Can I have a second on the motion to remove Justin Tucker from the room?
No. We will not maintain, if we will not convene with order, we will adjourn this meeting.
I have a motion on the floor. Can I have a second on the motion to exclude Mr. Tucker? He has no right to speak on points of order for this council.
I'd like to make
stop. You cannot speak.
Fine.
To be clear, when a motion is tabled, it is for the council, not the audience. Just to be clear. So we have a live motion on the table. And that motion, once again.
We have a community member here who is speaking as if they are a member of the council, making points of order and speaking over councilors. I am motioning to exclude them as per the bylaws.
Okay, motion on the table to exclude a particular member of the audience per the bylaws. Do we have a second?
I don't want to exclude anybody. If you just please don't raise your voice and speak out of order, please. Thanks. And everyone, David is very passionate about this. And I just really want to move on and to the part where we honor Sally.
Right. So, the motion dies on.
I just have a question. Motion does
that.
Maybe
we don't.
Don't. Don't. Don't.
Understood.
So, we retract your motion.
Sure.
Okay. Just a reminder, please. Just a reminder, we are here to maintain decorum. The raising the voices, the back and forth conversations are not conducive to maintaining decorum. I'll ask everyone in attendance to please exercise decorum and speak with your inside voices, and let's have civil conversations. Is that clear to everyone present?
Yes, I will lower my voice, maintain order whenever they speak out of turn.
Thank you.
Please continue, Councilor Roland.
Are there comments on the article? 911 calls ignored. We'll wrap the response and make up stuff instead.
I just had a question.
Yeah.
Is that viable? So help me understand, when you said that there's one squad car per district, does that mean that they're only allowed to go, or can other squad cars that might be in the area join in? I guess I get the concept, but I obviously I don't.
They could join in.
They could join
but
in.
But they're not required or held to any standard or expected, you know, but that's the priority.
Would it make sense, that's the question, would it make sense that the closest squad car, even if it's not the one that's the duty car, go to the area of issue rather than the car that might be on the other side of our district? And
Probably, I think.
And are they not allowed to do that, I guess? Does it have to first be that first car that goes, or can any car go?
It's not necessarily that they're not allowed to do it. It's that, in effect, the OIG has reported that CPD is not even logging responses to 51% of 911 calls. And the anecdotal data that we have is that in many areas, the same areas where they're doing traffic stops, even priority violent calls go unanswered, literally unanswered, whether it's for hours or just they never see a response. So it's not that necessarily that they are not allowed to do it, but what is happening is that they are not doing it. Yes.
So you had said that that the police seek a Judge Dredd style carte blanche policy. Is that correct?
I said that's what this gentleman was indicating when he said that they cannot do anything for public safety when that's exactly what their rules indicate, that they do it for public safety.
But did you say that that's what the police want?
Anyone saying that the police will only act if they don't have to have a consideration for public safety is proposing a nightmarish vision of Judge Dredd. Yes.
Okay, I have a question about how the police are operating. They stop a driver, and I would think most drivers would stand up for themselves and say, I have nothing to say to you, officer, and you don't have permission to search me. You can't search my car, you can't search my person. So are the police only going after people who are easily intimidated, who don't stand up for themselves, who let themselves get pushed around?
I'm not sure I can fully answer that question, but it's an interesting question.
Thank you. How would they know that?
Any final question?
Okay. So last meeting we talked about 911 calls and how people are assigned to go out to do them. A couple of weeks ago I was at a district council meeting where somebody who was head of training for 911 gave a half hour talk on how the 911 system works. She talked for like 20, 30 minutes, then there were questions. It might be useful for us to have her come and talk to this group so we can ask her and she can explain what the 911 system is. I can give her name and
please do later.
I asked her at the meeting when she come and talk to us. I did not represent the 14th district.
Thank you very much. I had mentioned in my updates, there's a petition on the table if you're interested in signing. We need 2,000 signatures to trigger a hearing with the CCPSA, the commission, of all the district councils. The Freedom to Move Coalition is also taking story submissions. If you know anybody who has been pulled over by the police, you can share your story. I said on Monday the 8th, there will be a banner drop. Additional accountability topic. Separate from pre-technical traffic stops, I received a phone call from BIA that was a surprise to me because I had not made any recent complaints. I was a party to one of the complaints spoken about by Councillor Vargas a long time ago. They told me that they could not follow a complaint against Commander Collazo because she was a district commander. There are factual errors with that statement because Commander Collazo moved on from her position as our district commander 7 or 8 months ago and is with the Area 5 Detective Bureau, I believe, or 2, possibly. Now, I suspect that I understand how this error possibly occurred because Collazo is still listed as the commander of the 14th District on the website officially from CPD. Which I find to be unacceptable and is an issue I've raised to her a number of times, at least 4. And I also did not make any complaints directly through COPA or otherwise on referencing the commander. I told BIA, please eradicate any complaints for Collazo. I didn't do that, that's improper, she doesn't deserve that. And I explained the issue with the website. This is just guessing, but I think potentially based on my statements in the article, Logan's Loose Lips, about the commander not meeting with me, that's Commander Melinda Linus, that OIG forwarded a complaint that got to BIA for the 14th District Commander that was mistaken for Collazo. I'm not sure what happened, but it is an issue that now has caused real harm to a good woman, I guess, or someone at least not deserving this situation, and I think it's entirely unacceptable that even someone like BIA doesn't know who the commander is. So what does that say about our constituents and the level of accessibility and transparency there? So Melinda Linus absolutely needs to correct that issue immediately. I think that's it for the
discussion
for police accountability.
Okay, thank you very much.
I have one question.
Yeah,
really. You were talking about 911 calls, or one neighbor talked about 911 calls. Has the district council made an effort to get access to those 911 calls? And if so, how has that gone? How has the police department responded?
I don't understand. You get access to those 911 calls?
I think there was an effort done many months back that I heard about with getting visibility into the 911 calls in the district. So I was just asking, how has that gone?
No real progress. It was in one of the district council priorities that made it into the recommendations to the CCPSA, but I'm not sure of the current status of that. So I could try to find out in terms of having the 911 call data be publicly accessible, similar to the way arrest data is publicly accessible. I understand that. Thank you.
Okay, our next item in discussions, discussions around restorative justice and how restorative courts reduce recidivism by 80%. This is something you'll notice in the meeting minutes from our quarterly meeting. You'll see that there was a bullet on there where we were, I would say I was honored to participate in one of the peace circles and see how they work with actual people that have gone through the restorative justice courts program before. Looking forward to hearing what my colleagues have to say about this discussion point.
Having trouble finding my paper, so I'm going to grab one. There's a single sheet on the table if you haven't had a chance. Sorry about that. So there was a big report from the Chicago Appleseed Foundation some weeks back, but I'm really focusing in on one small part of it. And this data is released from our Cook County Chief Justice, Tim Evans.
Thank you.
It's relatively new, and it takes time to get some data. And if you're talking about recidivism, you're not just completing the program, you're watching people after they complete the program. But here's the numbers that we have. For people who completed the program between 2020 and 2022, which was 135 individuals, 13% of them had a re-arrest event after 1 year, compared to, in the control group of the criminal court, 65%. So I'll just break that down a little bit more. First, what is the RJ Restorative Justice Community Court? We have one in Avondale, which is great. In the 14th district, one of the maybe basilicas on Central Park at George Street. Certain individuals can qualify. You have to be a resident of the neighborhood, and you have to be of a certain age. It's 18 to 26, I believe, and you have to commit a nonviolent offense. And then if the prosecution and your lawyer and you agree, you can go to the restorative justice court instead of the criminal court. So the criminal court, decides guilt or innocence and then sentencing, et cetera. The restorative court is different. It has a reparation of harm agreement that the individual creates with a peace circle of community members. And so they acknowledge ways that they want to improve their own life and their relationship with their community. And then they have to do that. And it can take anywhere from several months to over a year. Sometimes people set goals, including to get a GED or finish a diploma or have business goals to get licensing or training, et cetera. So anyway, the Chief Justice studied the results, and people who completed the Restorative Justice Community Court, 87% of them were, free of any negative interactions with the carceral system. They were not arrested again after completing the course, and only 13% were rearrested after a year. In the regular court system, you might be shocked to learn that 65% of people, the majority of people who leave the jails, will end up rearrested and potentially back into jails, which can show that arrests are not necessarily the best way to prevent future crime. All right, there we go. Yes.
You mentioned the Avondale Restorative Justice Council. Is that a state-sanctioned council, or is that an independent sort of arbitration committee that the prosecutors and the defendants agree to, and it's like a covenant?
I mean, it's sort of
Both? It requires everything at once in order to happen. The
committee, it's like the restorative justice committee itself, is that
the court,
independent of the...
The Tim, it's part of the...
Wait, if I can answer that, I'm not counsel.
Go for it.
The restorative justice community court, which is at St. Hyacinth Basilica, in Avondale, just outside of our district, District 14, that is. It is one of the flag station items that Chief Justice Timothy Evans has instilled. There's another one in Lawndale as well, to be clear. So those are the two flagships that he's trying to introduce restorative justice court systems throughout the entire city of Chicago. Thus far, my conversations with some of the facilitators at the restorative court in Avondale, they've yielded a lot of the results of which Council Orlikoff is speaking about. It's very positive. Highly trained people are basically putting this on and making certain that it succeeds, and I applaud their efforts.
Also, I am looking to try to organize some community members to join the peace circles there, because if we do that, they will actually be able to take in more cases from the criminal system and go through those cases quicker. And therefore, we will be improving safety and preventing crime based on, you know, this research and data, and improving people's lives directly. So I'm also talking with Paul Levin, who's not here today, but he's interested in checking out the court, and I want to find out what are the exact requirements and commitments so that I can get volunteers to help with that. Thanks.
How do you volunteer? Something I've been interested in.
Right, I don't know exactly through the court, and we're going to try to find out in more detail.
Okay. All right, we'll move on to the evidence-based approaches to community safety.
Yeah, do you want to start with Sally?
Yeah, we can do.
I meant for the Sally agenda item to be part of the safety agenda item.
Okay.
FYI. Ashley, do you want to, I'm going to sign one. Yeah, if you want.
So I'm really happy and honored that Sally is such a committed person in our community. She's committed to public safety for so long. And she recently donated her home to the KSA Land Trust. And as we all know, stable and affordable housing is a big part of community safety, and we chose to honor Sally today for that reason. So here, the 14th District Council recognizes Sally Hammond for her generous donation of her long-term residence in Logan Square to the Gator State Community Land Trust. While incredibly altruistic, her gift is not only charitable, it also serves to strengthen our entire community and elevate safety across the district. Meeting people's basic needs for affordable and stable housing is the basis of safe neighborhoods, along with access to good food, healthcare, and education. Sally is a longtime resident of the district and has the highest attendance for our 14th District Council meetings, as well as for CAPS Beat meetings that she has attended for decades since their creation. The undersigned members of the 14th District Council hereby honor Sally Hammond for her lifelong contributions to safety and her community.
The old house, I lived there for over 30 years. That's where I started going to beat meetings back in the 1990s. Beat 1431, my neighbor Dave at the time, got me introduced to that shortly after they began, and I hardly ever missed a meeting. And then when I couldn't get up and down the stairs anymore, I had to move. I now live across the street at the condo building over here. I'm still attending CAPS meetings, but now 14. And yeah, I think it's really, you know, in my mind, the House and the community are very much combined. I mean, I love that old house. I love the block I lived on. I love all the people that came to the CAPS meetings and that still are going. I just wish we had them every month.
We can fight for that.
Yeah, I would like that.
Another thing, I did visit your home yesterday, Sally, and it's renovated. I went with someone from the Good Estate Community Land Trust, 501c3, and they renovated it, and they have a beautiful plaque in your honor. Can I read that out loud? I will. This Good Estate Community Land Trust home was made possible by the generous donation of Sally Hammond, activist, community member, and mariner. So, and there's a beautiful quote saying, "I'm not afraid of storms, for I'm learning how to sail my ship." And that stuck with me, and I also learned that you were a sailor.
Yeah.
And that's very cool.
35 years on Rhodes 19.
Wow. Well, I'm so honored. Thank you, Sally.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sally.
And I didn't say anything directly, but I want to thank you. I think you've been very committed to public safety, and I appreciate every ounce of effort you've given to public safety and community policing since its inception. So thank you very much for being part of the keystone, if you will, of this police district council.
I wanted to enter another report into the record, which is the traffic safety white paper I referenced earlier from policingequity.org that I will share for the link. But there are two studies also referenced within there that get very granular in terms of if you change what police enforce in traffic, what effect is that having on public safety? Is increasing enforcement in certain things improving safety? And there are some reports that we don't need to get too into right now that we could discuss them later.
So we're gonna revisit that at a later time?
Sure.
All right.
Into
the voting process. All right, up for vote today, we have a resolution condemning independent actors falsely claiming to represent the elected 14th District Council and its constituents. And who brings forth this problem, this resolution?
I'm bringing this resolution for a vote today.
What's this one?
Yes. I think some of the public comments focused on this topic. I think I will read this, and I think it's all mentioned here, but one or two things that seemed to be mentioned was that it was enlisted by Councillor Laurent based on the ordinance. The ordinance says that the district council has the power to enlist volunteers, not that a district councilor has that power. It is not a power that any individual councilor has. So only acting together can we do that. So this is called the Clarity on Committees Resolution. The ordinance which created the elected district councils 280-070 has as its final provision H, language allowing the district councils to enlist qualified volunteers to assist councilors, including with serving on committees. Last year, I, Councilor David Orlikoff, announced that I was creating two community committees for the sole purpose of holding more in-depth conversations with constituents on particular topics of ongoing relevance to the work of the district council, those being restorative justice and police accountability. Later, Councilor Laurent announced that he was creating a public safety committee based on my model, and that this committee would function similarly to the volunteer advisory entities I had started. At its first meeting, community member Adam Burke was apparently selected as chair, although no bylaws or decision-making processes have been submitted or approved. None of the three groups were voted on by the council. Notably, the Public Safety Committee did not operate similarly to the other committees, as was promised. Instead, the so-called Public Safety Committee, this is a list, number one, acted independently of the 14th District Council, number two, assigned roles and titles, three, was externally facing, four, made publications and communications, including to media and elected officials, five, held meetings with elected officials and police under false pretenses, six, presented projects, proposals, and presentations to those same groups that had not been vetted or approved by the district council, seven, used names, emails, and logos to directly associate the group with city government, eight, met at the same time, place, and location as the district council, nine, was not accountable or transparent while pursuing a personal agenda rather than representing the needs and views of all constituents, 10, did not meet its stated purpose of facilitating discussions around public safety, as the self-appointed chair pursued a single-minded, unexamined, and unresearched goal of only increasing arrests. 11, was not sufficiently public or representative, as meetings with key figures were private and decisions were made only by the chair. The group has caused real harm. Multiple constituents and stakeholders have been falsely led to believe that unofficial sign-in sheets, emails, communications, publications, and meetings were representative of the elected 14th District Council. One government employee in charge of communications for the 32nd Ward, Alderman Scott Wagesback, repeatedly stated in front of multiple elected officials as witnesses that Mr. Burke was a member of the 14th District Council. Wagesback has repeatedly listed that Mr. Burke's materials in his official publications directly alongside information from the elected 19th District Council and the official 14th Police District of Chicago. But he has not listed any official meetings of the elected 14th District Council here, despite numerous requests that he do so. 14th District Commander Melinda Linus has refused to meet with the real 14th District Council in public, in private, or at our official monthly meetings, but she has met with Mr. Burke. As these issues came to light, constituents began conversations in our district council meetings, and I notified my department's legal counsel. The original two committees for police accountability and restorative justice were suspended and then disbanded in acknowledgement of community demands to bring all related activities back into the regular monthly district council meetings. Councilor Laurent and Mr. Burke were said to have agreed to suspend their committee until the issues were resolved and a plan agreed to. Mr. Burke slightly modified part of the logo and changed little else in his communications. He reconvened his group without any authorization to do so. Neither Mr. Burke nor Councilor Laurent have submitted any plans or proposals related to the operation of the Public Safety Committee. To date, the 14th District Council has not voted to create any committees, and so none exist. Anyone claiming to operate any committee or similar entity with a direct association to the 14th District Council is lying. This was already the case, but for the sake of clarity, let it be known. There are currently no committees of any kind or similar bodies of volunteers assisting with the work of the 14th District Council. The 14th District Council has not approved of, sanctioned, made requests of, or in any other way acted to designate any entity or individual as having a specified role in our work. It is entirely unacceptable for any individual or group to falsely claim any position or membership associated with the work, duties, and or powers of the 14th District Council. Anyone doing so is in danger of making themselves vulnerable to criminal liability for impersonating an elected official under Illinois Criminal Code 17-2, as well as of obstructing or retaliating against the work of the District Council under 280-150. Any individuals, especially elected officials, who assist in such activities are in danger of criminal liability for aiding and abetting with impersonation, which is a Class 4 felony. The 14th District Council is a democratic body. We were elected to give the community the power to reshape police accountability and community safety. It is obvious why some people wouldn't like that, even though if the police are doing nothing wrong, they should have nothing to hide. We cannot allow police, media, or elected officials to pick and choose what election results they want to respect. True accountability is only possible when there are consequences. The police have to work with us because the voters elected us. They might prefer to work with someone they hand-selected, like Mr. Burke, who will not hold them accountable, but luckily, that is not the way that democracy or the law works. I have introduced this resolution, as well as amendments to the council bylaws, to set the record straight and prevent the issues described herein from happening in the future. Tens of thousands of voters selected the 14th District Councilors in 2023. If members of the community are unhappy with the work of the council, they may run for a seat or support candidates that they prefer in the next election. They may not try to circumvent the law and our democracy by seeking to supplant and replace the duly elected district councilors who ran and won their elections. We have a lot of work to do, and we are not going to waste time on foolishness. So anyone meeting with Mr. Burke should understand that he has nothing to do with the work of the 14th District Council, period.
And we're voting on this? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, because there are a lot of issues with some of the claims made here. I mean, just off the top of my head, I've met with Commander Lewis on several occasions, so saying that she won't meet with the district council.
It's a fact. Since October 30th, you've been trying to get her in the room?
No, I've met with
her. No, you talked to her at a separate meeting.
I've met with her on many occasions.
Okay, and okay. Then she has to have a meeting with us, and that is not...
No, she doesn't. There's nothing in her charge. In our charge, it says, we are to work with the police commander. There's nothing on her side that she must do so. That's part of the challenge that we run into, the uphill battle that we run into. We've got to sit there and bridge that gap and make certain that it's a two-way street to where we're sharing information from the community to her, and it leads up through her workforce. There's nothing in her charge that says that she has to work with you. There's nothing in her charge that says she has to work with me. It's in our charge that we do everything we can to work with the police commander. That's where the uphill battle comes into, and I think that's where a lot of confusion comes into play.
That seems to be a separate issue from what you first raised.
Well, it's exactly it. So there's many different items on here that are just infactual. The 11 items that you brought in, there's a lot of
odd work. What is not factual?
They did act independently, but that's what the committee does. Sternly facing, I think they've been very upfront. Yes, that's the word.
When you wrote this statement, which I appreciate, because I do agree with a big part of this resolution. But when you wrote this, just like regarding some details, was trying to be able to look this over. And just like,
this resolution, because before we call to a vote, I'm going to ask that you repeal it and take a beat and read over it.
No, you've said that it's infactual. I've asked you to provide any examples, and you have not provided a single example.
I've met with Commander Lennis on many occasions. There's one.
Okay, I didn't say that you have never met with her. I said that she is refusing to meet with us, which is a fact.
Are you proposing to bring us to a vote?
Of course.
Okay. Go ahead and vote. Call your vote. What's state your motion?
Motion to pass the resolution clarity on committees.
I do agree.
Second?
Yeah.
Okay. And all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No.
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 That's for the council. I apologize. Okay, what's next?
Two votes on the bylaws.
I'm going to suspend the meeting for a moment. I've got two hands up. Please be brief. We've got.
Yes, in transparency, where do we get the final complaint against the board?
That information I can share with you offline.
Okay. I have a question about the actual resolution. That was the resolution you read, correct?
It's been voted into, so I don't know if it...
Yeah.
Well, that's fine. I just... My question is this. You said that they hold meetings at the same time. Currently, they're not... I don't think they're hosting a meeting right now. Is there any other meetings that they hosted at the exact same time as these meetings?
Several.
At the exact same time? So they met from 1 to 3 on the first Saturdays
separate
all the time?
Some libraries have separate rooms.
At the exact same time?
Yes.
Which months were those?
Hubble Park, I would know for sure. And also once here as well, at least.
All right, so we're going to move forward.
Okay.
I was at those meetings, so.
The bylaw amendments you have...
Impossible. No. And incorrect.
No. ...are split into two... switch in the agenda... Can we switch the order and do the agenda bylaw first, because that's the first page.
These are proposals, I'll do them in any order you want.
Okay, so establishing bylaws for an agenda setting process, amendments 2024, this is Article 3, meeting agendas. So all of this is new, this whole page. Meeting agendas, one, creation and advanced sharing of the agenda. Each member of the district council shall have the opportunity to add items to the agenda for each public meeting of the district council. The agenda shall be shared with all members of the district council each time new items are added. Department staff shall consult with the district council members about any advised changes to the agenda, items such as for legal compliance issues or for practicality, clarity, and accessibility considerations. Two, modification and approval of the agenda. Prior to 5 days before the start of the respective meeting, a district council member who submits an agenda item may modify or remove the item they submitted. Members of the district council may also add, modify, or remove agenda items by a majority agreement. Members of the district council operating under a majority agreement will have until 48 hours prior to the meeting to make changes to any items for vote, and until the start of the meeting to make changes to any items for discussion. After any alterations, the agenda shall be shared with all district councilors. Three, items for vote. If a member of the district council submits a new business item for vote to the agenda, the member shall provide the other members of the district council with a full description of the item to be considered at least 24 hours in advance of the meeting. If the member does not submit a full description in time, when the item is taken up for consideration, any member of the district council may raise an objection, in which case the district council will move on to the next item of business. Four, standing agenda items. The 14th district council shall have three standing agenda items for each meeting to house various topics of relevance to our work. Counselors may bring more specific topics, speakers, or materials to house under these larger categories, and constituents may ask questions and raise ideas and concerns. These placeholder discussion topics to be included in each 14th District Council public monthly meeting agenda are: one, police accountability; two, restorative justice; three, evidence-based approaches to community safety. So in summary, what number one says is, we each can add agenda items, and it should be, we should see every time an agenda item is added. Two says that we can change our own submissions up to 5 days before the next meeting, and that after, at any time and after the 5 days, a majority decision can alter the agenda. And three says voting items, we should receive a larger description of the item for the counselors to consider before the vote. And then the standing agenda items. So that's the resolution to amend the bylaws, adding an article on meeting agendas. Any discussion or questions on this?
Again, considering I just got this less than 24 hours ago, I'm gonna say that we suspend the vote on this for another meeting to get the full breadth of exactly what we're doing here and make certain that it yields the results that we are intending.
It was emailed out, it was emailed by the lawyer on Thursday night.
Okay. I got a draft on Thursday night, but like I said, I think that it's in the best interest of all involved that we take a beat on this and digest it, make certain it's gonna yield the results we're anticipating. That's my discussion point on it.
Any on the comments on your own?
No, I agree with this. I would like a more transparent process when dealing with the agenda, which is the issue in question. So thank you for typing this up and working with the lawyer.
Thanks. There's a hand. I'm not sure what your opinion is on that. Okay, I'd like to call a vote then on this. Is it a resolution to amend the bylaws?
Okay, so we have a motion on the table to amend the bylaws under Article 3, subsection M in its entirety is written. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right, all in favor of approving the amendment as written, say aye.
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 All opposed? No.
Okay, lastly, a vote establishing bylaw amendments for community committees. There are three sections to these amendments.
It's a little out of order. It goes 7-4. So it starts with Article 7, enlistment of volunteers. Most of this, there was a template shared by our lawyer titled Enlistment of Volunteers. I did make some alterations to Section B. But since this is new business for us, I guess I'll read it. Article 7, Enlistment of Volunteers. A, Enlistment of Volunteers. Pursuant to the ordinance, district counselors may enlist qualified volunteers to assist them in carrying out their duties, including but not limited to serving on committees pursuant to this section. For example, district counsel may enlist volunteers to ensure that the perspectives and experiences of district residents who are not United States citizens are reflected and incorporated in the district counsel's work. B, votes to establish volunteer arrangements. To establish a formal volunteer entity, the district council shall hold a vote in public, a meeting, to decide whether to use the ordinance to establish the formal volunteer entity. Such vote shall take place if the district council seeks to enlist a volunteer entity that adopts a name to hold recurring meetings on a topic related to district council work, or that will have a formalized membership, decision-making structure, designated roles, or title. To vote on a volunteer arrangement under the ordinance, a member of the district council may submit a written proposal outlining the purpose of the volunteer entity and the scope of the volunteer entity's activities. If the district council votes to establish a formal volunteer entity under Section H, the district council shall determine the following. So first, what this says is that if there's going to be a group acting as a committee, we will have a vote to establish such a group. Then it says that if the district council votes to establish a formal volunteer entity, the district council shall determine the following. One, if the entity operates under a name or maintains any public presence. Two, if the entity will have any defined membership, designated roles, or titles. Three, if the entity will have a formal decision-making process. Four, if the entity's activities will include holding any external communications, meetings, or events, or produce any publications. Or five, if the entity will be charged with presenting recommendations or proposals on a regular basis to the district council or individual members of the district council. So this says that if we are creating a group, then we are going to say what that group does. C says volunteer activities shall take the form of either advisory, assistance, or general support. The district council and members of the district council shall not delegate official duties to volunteers, grant volunteers substantive decision-making authority, or hold out volunteers as agents, representatives, proxies, stand-ins, or spokespersons for the district council. D, First Amendment rights. Nothing in this article shall be interpreted as curtailing the First Amendment rights of civilians who take part in supporting the district council. Does it make sense to go article by article?
If you could, I can read it as well. If you want to just summarize where you're going with.
Okay. Well, I mean, or should we vote on this one, or should I go through the other one?
I'm going to follow the same objection all the way through. I don't think that there's been enough time to sit there and really digest everything. So, if you want to just kind of breeze over it, like I said, it's entirely up to you. If you want to do them wholesale, I'm going to object to them either way. So.
Okay, I think it would make sense to go article by article so that we understand them. So yeah, that's Article 7, listen to volunteers. Any questions or discussion on Article 7?
Sounds important. Okay, I'm going to restate my objection.
Sure. I will respond just for context. Everything that I proposed today has come from discussions that we've been having at least since December in these meetings. So that's just a fact. I would motion to call the vote on amending the bylaws to include Article 7, enlistment of volunteers.
Okay, motion to vote on the table on the enlistment, Article 7, enlistment of volunteers, letters A, B, C, and D. Do I have a second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No.
All right, next Article 8, prohibition of impersonation of public officials. Pursuant to state law, 720 Illinois Criminal Statutes 5-17-2B2, a person commits a false personation if he or she knowingly and falsely represents himself or herself to be a public officer or a public employee or an official or employee of the federal government.
If a member of the district council has reason to believe that a member of the public is impersonating being a public officer of the district council member may report the matter to the proper authorities to investigate the issue. It's pretty straightforward.
And my question about this is, we're going to restate what's already in the municipal code?
Yes, because most people don't understand it. Most people don't memorize the code.
It is the municipal code. I mean, I think that if we could summarize it, and this is my suggestion.
I would not be opposed to that. I guess I think our lawyer prefers word for word.
And I think he would be in agreement with me if we were to sit there and say, you know, prohibition of impersonation of public officials. See municipal code, That's, you know, because like I said, it's already in our municipal code. I don't think it makes much sense for us to sit there and incorporate pre-written law into bylaws. And the thing about it is we got to remember, these bylaws pertain to the three of us.
Sure. They pertain to anything that is said to be coming from this body.
We're governed by these bylaws, not our attendees, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm just to recapitulate, I think it's, I don't have any problem as far as like, okay, if you want that clause in there, we're not going to impersonate one another. That's what I'm, it's like our bylaws.
I mean, I wish it hadn't been relevant. I wish that the official communications employee for Scott Wagasback did not say that Adam Burke was a member of the 14th District Council. And I wish that we didn't have constituents coming to multiple meetings saying that they had showed up early to a meeting that they thought was our meeting but ended up being a different meeting. So, I wish that we weren't having these problems.
Okay, but my point is that these bylaws pertain to the three of us, this body. It doesn't pertain to anyone outside, on the other side of this table.
Yeah,
so, my point of order here is that, you know, prohibition of impersonation of public officials. So, just putting this in our bylaws makes no sense. I'm just saying, I don't think it's a necessary clause to add into our bylaws that have been through with us and our behavior here on the council.
Agreed.
Do you want to, does that make sense to you? What I'm saying?
I mean, it makes sense because we can't impersonate public officials because they're public officials, but I think this is just considering the situation with Adam Burke and him several times being confused as a public official. And I do appreciate clarity
and distinguishing
between volunteer and
public. Pardon? There's no discussion. Okay. And
I'm not withdrawing it this time. I heard you. Article 4, District Council spokespersons. This is a pre-existing article with some amendments to it. So the First Amendment rights. Nothing in this section shall limit or infringe on any member or civilian's right to free speech and expression as an individual. Adding a civilian to this section. Paragraph C, official platforms, channels, and publications and materials. Department staff shall not upload any notice and agenda or any other information or materials on behalf of the 14th District Council or to any of our official government or city websites, platforms, and channels without the approval of the majority of the 14th District Council, except as required under local, state, and federal law. Any material on an official platform that violates union bylaws shall be removed. D, representatives of the district council, members of the 14th District Council have exclusive rights to the following activities that they may delegate to CCPSA staff. A, speaking on behalf of the 14th District Council. B, making council recommendations to the Chicago Police Department. C, carrying out the mandate for the 14th District Council set forth in the city ordinance. And lastly, groups or individuals who are not explicitly empowered within these bylaws as official representatives of the 14th District Council should not engage in activities which imply that they represent the council. That concludes the amendments.
Okay, I'm going to restate my previous objection because, like I said, these bylaws govern our behavior, how we operate, not anyone else. But if you want to continue on through it, I'm not going to stop you.
I have to govern how we behave. You could do it in terms of governing your behavior in relation to the creation of an entity that,
the terms of our work. So you could do it under that.
I'm going to ask that you retract that statement. That sounds as if you're making a personal account.
Well, you're saying the bylaws have to refer to us, and they easily can't refer to us.
Well, I think you're alluding to us, and I would take it as you're saying that I'm conducting illegal activity.
I didn't say that. You've been credited with enlisting the committee that has caused the problem. The committee was said to have been working with the police department on leasing vehicles, which is not under any circumstance allowed. Even under a vote that we partake, we cannot delegate duties that we have. Motion to vote to amend the bylaws with Article 8 and Article 4.
Okay, we have a motion on the table to amend the bylaws, adding in Article 8 in its entirety, and Article 4, Sections B through D, and sub-number 2. I don't know if there's anything
that's part of that.
We have a second.
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? No. Okay. All right. Motion passes. All right. Okay, our next meeting. I know everyone's looking forward to getting out of here. It looks like the weather's getting better for us. Anyway, I hope everybody had a wonderful Holy Week, as they call it. And I'm looking forward to seeing each and every one of you back in May, where we'll be at the Humboldt Park Library, 6105 North Troy.
605 North Troy, yes.
Okay, and that'll be at 1 o'clock on
May 4th.
Really quick in my updates, I didn't include, I know that when Adam met with Katie, he says that David and I both don't have a good relationship with the police and that we don't welcome police in our meetings, which is false. I remember in January, I motioned to invite the commander to the meeting because I believe that we all ultimately want public safety. We all have a different vision for how we get there. But working with the police is essential, and I don't want to take that away from anyone's experience. And I do want to say that I'm willing to amend my relationship, which hasn't been broken, to be honest. I recently just texted with the tech sergeant, and he asked me to save his number because he changed it. So if you all want to meet with the police and invite the commander here, I'm very much open and willing to. Now, my co-counselor Chris has extended the invitation. I'm willing to extend that invitation myself now.
Thank you, Councilor Hart.
Yes?
Can I just make the request that it not be a carte blanche attendance and just only when we invite them to the meeting?
Correct. That's very important to me as well. And for the meeting in May, I may be absent because I'm visiting family in Mexico. I'll do my best to attend via Zoom, and any updates I have, I'll email Anna about it.
Thank you very much. I hope you have a seat, Chris.
Thank you.
Okay, that being said, our next meeting scheduled May 4th at 1 p.m. at the Humboldt Park Library, which is with the address of 1605 North Troy Street. Hope to see everyone there. With that being said, do we have a motion to adjourn?
Second.
And a second. The meeting is adjourned. Time is down.
Okay, now I'm going to say something. It is the height of hypocrisy to dump pages and pages and pages of revisions and changes on the council without prior notice, 2 days' notice. That is hypocritical.
Yeah, 30 days is generally how many professional organizations do bylaw changes. 2 days is very unheard of.
No power to
it. I'm glad that the CCPSPI will continue to meet as a new organization, hopefully.
We can talk about that. Not necessarily. Oh, completely office.
I appreciate your
So I can certainly understand all the confusions because the committees are, the committee. Yeah, I can understand. I can understand confusion. Was there actually?
They say it's all the care.
Yeah. All right. What are they? In any person, an elected power employee. And was that a mistake on the 32nd board person's part, or did he actually say that, hi, I'm from the, did he tell that person he was on the third floor? Well, because if you're making an accusation, you should have some facts to back it up. Okay, so that's, I'm listening. So you said, that's why I'm asking questions of writing this down.
That's not my job. My job is to make sure that these problems don't happen.
Okay, so but you accuse the guy of impersonating somebody. Now your reason for saying that it's don't call me stupid isn't an argument. Calling me a fucking idiot isn't very good decorum for a
problem. I don't have to.
That's fine. But okay, well if you're that's fine. I can ask you all questions I want, but you're making accusations that he's impersonating.
Use our inside source.
I can talk to him.
User.
Well, he said he's been using curse words at me, and he's called me stupid.
User.
Excuse me, sir. Are you a reporter?
Yes.
Today.
Did you hear this exchange just happen? I got my information right here. The address, the P.O. box is different, but the cell phone number. Let me give you my first one.
How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Oh, thank you.